Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We're the kids who grew up and are moving out of the house. We might still come home.
Two large tribal organizations leave the Alaska Federation of Natives. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Alaskans mourn missing and murdered Indigenous loved ones.
Every voice that cannot be heard because they are silenced way too early, but at the hand of another person, it's not right.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
In rural Alaska communities, village public safety officers make a difference every day. Hired regionally, VPSOs are trained in public safety services such as community policing, fire prevention, life-saving emergency medical response, and search and rescue. VPSO receive competitive pay, benefits, and opportunities for advancement. To start your career in public safety and learn more about becoming a VPSO, go to vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by VPSO.
Two large tribal organizations are pulling out of the Alaska Federation of Natives. The Central Council of the Thlinget and Haida Indian Tribes and the Tanana Chiefs Conference are both leaving the influential organization. AFN was formed to fight for land claims more than a half century ago and has continued to serve as a powerful voice for Alaska Native people in both state and national politics. Thlinget and Haida, which represents 35,000 tribal members in southeast Alaska, says it no longer needs AFN's advocacy because it has developed its own capacity to advance its causes. Thlinget and Haida President Richard Peterson says the tribe still plans to collaborate with AFN.
I don't want it to look like a divorce. I keep using the analogy. We're the kids who grew up and are moving out of the house. We might still come home for a home-cooked meal or to do laundry now and again, right?
The Tanana Chiefs Conference, which represents villages in interior Alaska, said in a statement that it was ending its membership in AFN to focus on protecting salmon, one of the main sources of food for the region. It says numerous resolutions on the issue have passed during the AFN convention over the years, but it's seen little action on steps to protect the Alaska Native subsistence lifestyle. Some longtime leaders in AFN have called the move to pull out of AFN a mistake. Paul Ontaguk, an Alaska Native historian, agrees. He says trouble has been brewing within the ranks of AFN for a long time and says these departures raise questions about the health of the organization.
Is it adapting? Is it reflecting the broad spectrum of interests of Alaska Native peoples and organizations? And by pulling out, it's a way of voting publicly a lack of confidence.
In the last 3 years, disputes between regions have arisen during AFN's annual convention. In that time, 3 regional corporations have pulled out of AFN, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Doyon, and the Aleut Corporation. AFN's longtime president, Julie Kitka, says she's withholding comment about the withdrawals until after an AFN board meeting next week. On May 5th, the country honored Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Awareness Day. Groups gathered in cities and towns throughout the state to remember those who have been caught up in the epidemic. In Bethel, dozens of community members met at noon for a march. Men and women dressed in red, Alaska State Troopers, search and rescue, police, and firefighters came in uniform. KYUK's Sunny Bean was there and has this report.
People have signs reading, "We Stand as One," "No More Missing Sisters," and "Native Hope." Others have red handprints painted on their bodies and t-shirts. Cascading honks of approval met community members marching down Eddie Hoffman Memorial Highway. This is organizer Stacy Alarelia after the march.
It felt good. I had a lot of energy and I was waving at people and honking, trying to let people honk, you know.
Lingering attendees paint messages like "No one should be missing" on retired t-shirts that will be hung outside the women's shelter as part of the Clothesline Project, a nationwide initiative encouraging support for domestic violence survivors. Alaska Native women suffer from disproportionately high rates of sexual violence. They are 10 times more likely to be killed by men than white women in Alaska. During the march, Trooper Zach Huckstep spoke about the importance of the day to show people they'll be supported if they speak up about crimes.
This is important to get people not just awareness, but visually see that other people are there to support them.
Huckstep said hearing from the community gives legs to the process of justice. Often when his team shows up in a village because of reported crimes,
there's like two or three or four more people to come out to say that they also have been victimized, but they won't say that until you get there, until they see that there's other people also in support of them.
He said troopers also have a responsibility to be a stable presence in communities.
I've been here for 7 years in this position, and having people have a recognizable face and be familiar with people is really important to allow that trust to take hold.
Before the march, the crowd heard from the organizers. City Council member Sophie Swope read the city's proclamation. It commits Bethel to proactively collaborating to strengthen intervention and prevention efforts.
Whereas May 5, 2023, the community is invited to wear red and attend the Missing Murdered Indigenous People Awareness March.
Halfway through, the speakers ditched the megaphone and ushered everyone closer.
Come closer, let's make a tighter circle.
Squeeze in, everybody squeeze in.
Snow began to stick in people's hair, and then they stood shoulder to shoulder.
So real people are.
80% of the people living on the YK Delta are Alaska Native. Most Native Alaskans have experienced sexual violence. The vast majority have experienced physical violence. Native Alaskan men and women are some of the most at-risk populations and least likely to get justice. Many stories have never been brought to light. Monica Charles from Bethel's Women's Shelter spoke to the crowd huddling around her.
It has been a long time coming to have the acknowledgement that someone from a lesser background, from a smaller community, from a village, from a single parent or being raised by a grandparent from a Native background, that they are forgotten. Every voice that cannot be heard because they are silenced way too early, but at the hand of another person, be it Native or non-Native, it's not right.
Charles said she wants to remember lost community members for more than their tragic absence. But with red handprints stamped across faces and a crisp, cold, biting exposed fingers, people will remember that should be here. And are not.
And I'll just close that there is justice possible. Sophie Sergey, my college friend, she's come to justice. And she will still never, ever be forgotten. Not as long as I breathe and am on the board for TWC, which has been a while.
Sophie Sergey was 20 years old when she left a dorm room for a cigarette and never came back. She was found in a dormitory bathroom at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She had been raped and murdered. In 2022, 29 years later, a jury convicted Stephen Downs after revisiting DNA samples. Charles described Sophie as the nicest person with a gentle demeanor.
As we remember our relatives who have been murdered or have gone missing, I want to acknowledge and thank the partners, agencies, shelters, elders, friends, children, students, parents, sisters, cousins, grandparents, for coming out and showing our support for all of our loved ones in today's activities. Brianna.
That was Vivian Corthius, CEO of AVCP, and Frida Jimmy and Hilda Oscar singing the opening song. In Bethel, I'm Sunny Bean.
Coming up, the Anchorage Fire Department prepares for the start of wildfire season.
Well, in Anchorage, we really have two fire seasons every year. We have the pre-greenup fire season and then the post-greenup fire season.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Anchorage's controversial Deputy Library Director Judy Elledge is resigning. Mayor Dave Bronson announced in a brief statement today that Elledge's last day is May 15th. Her resignation came hours before the Anchorage Assembly was set to vote on a resolution recommending that the mayor ask her to step down for a number of reasons, including reports of bullying and harassment. The resolution heavily cites reporting last month by the Anchorage Daily News and ProPublica about Elledge's inflammatory and racist comments, some of which were recorded. Assembly Chair Chris Constant, one of the resolution's sponsors, says Elledge's resignation was, quote, inevitable following the article.
I'm just grateful. It's time for the whole conversation about the library to heal.
Elledge, a retired teacher, was also Governor Mike Dunleavy's recent pick for a seat on the National Education Commission of the States. A spokesman for the governor said today that Elledge will keep that position. Elledge did not immediately respond to a request for comment today, nor did the Bronson administration. One of Governor Dunleavy's nominees for the University of Alaska Board of Regents was narrowly denied by the state legislature today. Bethany Markham's nomination was defeated by just one vote at a joint session of the House and Senate. Several legislators raised concerns about Markham's role in the state's redistricting board. A judge struck down the map the board approved, writing at the time that the majority, including Markham, did not make a good faith effort to incorporate public feedback, which resulted in a, quote, arbitrary and capricious map. Representative Andrew Gray, an Anchorage Democrat, told the floor Markham's work on the board was part of the reason he would vote against her nomination.
This nominee drove what has been ruled a partisan gerrymander that would have disenfranchised the voters of East Anchorage. And she did it twice.
Lawmakers who voted no also pointed to Markham's support of the governor's steep budget cuts to the university system in 2019. Her defenders, though, said Markham's policy positions would not affect her ability on the Board of Regents, which acts as a board of directors for Alaska's three public universities. Representative Kevin McCabe, a Republican from Wasilla, called her smart, driven, and hardworking.
I've read through the statutory duties of the UAA Board of Regents, and I don't recall anywhere in the statutes related to this appointment or any other that we are supposed to hold someone's policy position and opinions of their employer against them.
Several Republican senators joined Democrats in opposing Markham. Dunleavy's office did not respond to a request for comment about the vote. His other nominees for department heads and members of public boards and commissions were all approved. Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola and other Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives say they're worried the U.S. Supreme Court is about to weaken the Indian Child Welfare Act, known as ICWA, to the detriment of Native children and their tribes. Peltola, the first Alaska Native person elected to Congress, previously worked as a tribal court judge, where child custody cases were a mainstay. At a congressional roundtable today, Peltola stressed the importance of keeping children with their families or placing them within their tribe.
I think for every single human group ever in existence, children are precious. Children are our future. And certainly for Natives, it is no different.
The Supreme Court is expected to rule soon on a challenge to ICWA brought by the state of Texas and a group of non-Native adoptive parents. They say the Indian Child Welfare Act makes unconstitutional distinctions based on race. Supporters of ICWA say it's based on tribal affiliation. Congress passed the law to reverse the wholesale alienation of children from their tribes. New York University law professor Maggie Blackhawk says the trend reached terrifying levels by the 1950s and 60s.
State governments separated over 100,000 of the estimated 400,000 Native children from their parents and placed those children in homes with no political, cultural, or linguistic connection to their nations.
The justices heard arguments on the case called Brackeen versus Holland in November. A ruling is expected by the end of June. Cool temperatures this spring have delayed breakup and greenup, and that in turn will delay Alaska farmers from getting their crops in the ground. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, that means farmers are facing the likelihood of a below-average harvest for the third year in a row.
Delta Junction farmer Scott Mugridge has to throttle up when he steers his tractor onto a muddy and partially submerged field to scatter some hay for the 50 or so hungry cows and calves there. Mugridge grows hay and feed for his 600 head of cattle, and he sells the rest to livestock owners around the state. But he worries he may not have any surplus this year because cooler than average temperatures last month kept his fields mostly covered with snow until the last week or so. And he says unless it warms up quickly, it'll take a couple of more weeks at least before the meltwater soaks in and the mud dries enough to begin planting hay and barley.
We're a long way from planting this year. You know, the next step is going to be getting enough heat in that soil to sprout any crop to start with.
Phil Kaspari is the Delta Area UAF Cooperative Extension Service agent, and he says the presence of all that snow and slush on fields around the area means farmers aren't going to be able to get those plants in the ground anytime soon.
We normally like to be in the field really making good progress around May 10th, and that isn't going to happen.
Kaspari says grains like barley should be planted by May 25th to enable it to mature enough to ensure a good harvest. And also because that's the cutoff date for farmers to be eligible for a full crop insurance payout if the growing season turns out poorly again.
Last year, with all of the snow that we had, a lot of guys didn't get started until the 22nd, 23rd. And we had that late July frost and then that early August frost.
Mugridge says farmers were already dealing with problems left over from the pandemic, like a sluggish supply chain and high fuel and fertilizer costs. And he says if cool weather persists, farmers are facing the prospect of a third consecutive year of poor harvest.
When we have these late plantings, we hope we have an extended late fall or something, but we really haven't had those either.
A late spring warm-up doesn't mean the growing season will extend later into the fall, says Rick Toman, a climate specialist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks' Center for Climate Assessment and Policy. But he says this summer's long-term forecast suggests it'll be warmer than usual in the interior and that rainfall will be about average.
The odds tilt to favor significantly above normal.
Toman says he understands why farmers would like temperatures to warm up as quickly as possible, but he says gradual warming is better to reduce the chances of flooding.
With the deep snowpack, with the very cold April, were we to have temperatures, in the 70s, which at this time of year is entirely possible, that would be a real recipe for serious breakup flooding.
Mugridge is president of the Alaska Farm Bureau, and he says farmers around the state are dealing with the same problem. He says he's encouraged by higher temperatures over the past few days in the interior that have melted most of the snow on his fields, and he's glad to hear about the warmer than usual summer forecast.
We can still get there this year. I mean, we may be late, but maybe we'll have the fall that'll make a bountiful crop.
That's a hope shared by all of Alaska's farmers and livestock producers. Meanwhile, Mugridge says he'll continue to use last year's harvest to keep his cows contented. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
The Nenana Ice Classic tripod moved just enough to stop the clock yesterday in the annual guessing game of when the ice will go out on the Tanana River. Organizers say the ice officially went out at 4:01 p.m. Alaska Standard Time Monday. There was some excitement Sunday when the black and white striped tripod fell on its side, but it took another day for the decaying ice and current to push it downstream enough to stop the shore-based clock it's tethered to. People who guessed the correct time on their tickets will split a jackpot of more than $222,000. Ice Classic organizers said yesterday they were in the process of notifying the winners and that checks would be mailed out June 1st. Alaska's fire season is in full swing. As of this afternoon, there have been 24 fires so far. Six of those were discovered within the past 24 hours. Beth Ipson, spokesperson for the Bureau of Land Management Alaska Fire Service, joined Talk of Alaska this morning. Ipson says the majority of these early season fires were ignited by human activity.
There was a fire escape from Burn Barrel. There was one on a shooting range on Chena Hot Springs Road. And then a couple others, like a campfire.
Dead grasses and plant debris exposed by melting snow are prime fire-starting material. Fire managers are encouraging Alaskans to be careful with possible ignition sources, such as chainsaws or ATVs, and to ready homes for fire season by moving firewood stacks away from buildings and clearing brush away from properties. While this year's heavy snowpack and cold spring pushed back the start to fire season in many parts of the state, climatologist Rick Toman said climate change is generally causing an earlier snowmelt.
We've lengthened the wildfire season. It was just last year we had the Kwikluk fire that burned over 10,000 acres in April, and the very early start to the fire season in southwest Alaska.
Toman also noted that with climate warming, lightning is becoming more frequent in some areas, including southwest Alaska. Data shows that humans typically cause more fires in Alaska than lightning, but lightning-caused fires account for most of the acres burned. And while the vast majority of scorched acreage is usually in remote areas of the state, there's always the possibility of a fire getting out of control in a city, burning homes and maybe even injuring or killing people. That's what worries Anchorage Fire Chief Doug Schrage, who says, from his perspective, a fast-moving wildfire is the single biggest threat the city faces. So, Schrage says the Anchorage Fire Department is stepping up wildfire fighting efforts this summer with better preparation and planning.
A large fire could escape our containment lines. It could jump roads. If the weather conditions and the wind and the terrain were just right, such a fire could move very quickly up the hillside, either in Eagle River or Anchorage, and consume many people's very expensive homes. And that's what keeps me awake at night. We have a very effective structural firefighting force in Anchorage. We're very good at what we do. We go to structure fires and we extinguish them quickly and efficiently. We save people all the time. And we aren't really set up to be a wildfire fighting force. That's something that I hope to change.
Gotcha. I want to ask you more about preparations and planning for this summer. But first, just to kind of remind folks, I mean, we're maybe not seeing, you know, early summer conditions right now. It hasn't been exactly warm. There's plenty of snow still melting off out there here in Anchorage. But summer is surely to come, I hope. And what are some of the ways that fires get started in an urban setting that people should know about?
Well, in Anchorage, we really have two fire seasons every year. We have the pre-green-up fire season and then the post-green-up fire season. The pre-green-up fire season is just about to occur. And what this is when the snow has begun melting or has melted, and it exposes all these dead grasses and very fine fuels that dry out quickly, and they pose a real problem. And then we have the normal fire season once the trees have leafed out and the plants have bloomed, and the weather becomes to come, it starts to get hotter and drier, and that's when we really start to worry as well. To the question about how these fires start, most of the fires that are started in Anchorage are human-caused, and some, actually I would say many, are started by campers, municipal campers, urban campers, people that are having warming fires or cooking fires in parks and wooded areas, and sometimes those fires escape.
Yeah. You mentioned the planning that you're hoping to do and to maybe change things a little bit this summer. What does that mean? Does that mean different training? Does that mean, you know, putting firefighters and equipment in the right places? What does that look like?
Well, at one time, the Anchorage Fire Department had what we called a wildfire mitigation office, and it closed in 2008 for budgetary reasons. And one of the
main purposes of the Wildfire Mitigation Office was to develop and manage the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, which is in existence today, but it hasn't been updated since 2008. So in fact, very little actual planning or preparations have been done in the last 15 years since 2008. So what we hope to do is to reconstitute the Wildfire Mitigation Office here in Anchorage. And we are working very hard to get some federal funding to support this. We have some state funding available to us. And then we have money that was appropriated to us for fuels mitigation. When we stand up this wildfire mitigation program, there will be four main components to it. There will be community planning, which will help us to improve the ability of residents to escape from a fire. It will have a fuels management component, which will be fuels risk assessments, and some of that work's undergoing now, and some fuel treatments, including thinning, shaded fuel breaks, fuel removal, and so forth. There will be a public education component to it, which will expand our ability to communicate with the public about how they can prepare for a wildfire and what they can do when a wildfire occurs. And then fourthly is the training and operations component. So we'll use some of that money to better equip our firefighters with some pumps and small trucks and hose and personal protective equipment and provide training to our personnel.
You know, given that it sounds like there are more preparations to do, more planning, more training, and that there are maybe some changes you'd like to see this summer focused on the possibility of a wildfire in Anchorage, how prepared is the Anchorage Fire Department right now to deal with that problem?
We are more prepared this year than we have been in recent years. This year, we just finished several weeks of wildfire fighting training and exercises with all of our line personnel. These are the shift workers that are on duty each day. And the training we provided was training that we haven't previously provided, or at least not in many years. So we introduced our structural firefighters into a little bit more sophisticated wildfire training tactics. So in that way, we're better prepared. We are better equipped this year than we have been in the past. We do have much more to do in terms of preparation and community education and planning and training and operations. But I'm feeling better this year than I did this time last year.
That was Anchorage Fire Chief Doug Schrage. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Rhonda McBride, Wesley Early, and Kavitha George in Anchorage, Katie Anastas and Lex Trinan in Juneau, Sunny Bean in Bethel, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.